Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Families have been central to TV shows almost since the invention of the medium. Whether we're talking about Rockwellian families from classic sitcoms, sprawling soap opera dynasties, dysfunctional reality TV clans, or the blended families of the 21st century, TV shows have featured just about every permutation of family you can think of. Now, in a special Patreon-sponsored episode, the Great Pop Culture Debate wants to look back at TV families past and present to determine the best TV family of all time. If you're saying I play favorites, you're wrong. I love all my episodes equally. I don't care much for Best Movie Monster. I'm your host, Eric Resniak. Please help me welcome my panels for this episode. She makes it clear from her picks, we're not the boss of her now, and we're not so big. It's Amma Marfo.
This pod's unfair, but I keep coming back.
Yes, no, maybe, I don't know. Can you repeat the question? Her life goal was to have a Jack and Jill bathroom and a set of boy-girl twins. Please welcome back Amy Pilot.
I have a boy and a girl and a bathroom that's kind of Jack and Jill, so I think I'm doing okay.
Did your dream also include a live-in housekeeper? Because my current dreams absolutely do. And finally, we have an extra special guest for this episode. Much like the Lannisters, he really loves his families. It's our Patreon sponsor, Steve Nikoloff.
Eric, when you play the Great Pop Culture Debate, you either win or you die.
Oh my God, have I been supposed to have been killing people this whole time? I better get on that. So, to learn more about how we came up with the top 16 TV families, check out the quick preview recap on our main feed or become a Patreon supporter of the podcast for exclusive access to the full part one. Make sure you also head to greatpopculturedebate.com to find the downloadable bracket for this episode so you can make your picks and play along with us at home. With that out of the way, let's gather around the table for family game night and get into these debates. First up, it's the creepy, kooky one-seed, the Adamses from the Adams Family, up against the creepy conservative Alex P. Keaton and his fam from Five Seed Family Ties. Steve, make like thing and give the Adamses a hand. I will play politics and push for the Keatons. Steve, why don't you go first?
Yeah, I mean, the Adamses are sort of quintessential in a way. We talked about this a little bit on the previous or on the Patreon episode, but I think that it bears repeating, which is that the Adamses have lived with us through decades. I mean, literally decades. You know, from the original series in the 60s to the new Wednesday series in the current, whatever we're in, End Times, I think I call it
now.
Yeah,
I think that's what it is. Yeah.
But the family dynamic of the Adamses really just really encapsulates a television family. You have a very loving mother and father who, for all of their children's quirks, love their children and will defend them to the death. You know, they have a fun family dynamic. They don't always get along, but at the end of the day, there's true family love there. And, you know, like I said before, but I'll say it again, one of my rubrics is how focal is the family in the show? And it is the show. I think that they really, like I said, encapsulate what a television family is. And to be perfectly fair to them, they were one of the old school ones who really defined what a family was for a lot of the other families in this bracket. And so for that reason, I think we have to respect that.
Great. Awesome pitch. So I'll talk a little bit about Family Ties. If you want to talk about how central is family to the series, Family Ties, it's literally in the names. So what made the Keatons stand out in a very crowded, maudlin 80s family sitcom field is the politics of the characters. You have ex-hippies Steve and Elise Keaton, played by future Movie of the Week mainstays Michael Gross and Meredith Baxter Burney. I know she's only Meredith Baxter now, but I can't think of her as anything other than Meredith Baxter Burney. They are parents to three kids, aggressively conservative Republican Alex, played by Michael J. Fox, materially obsessed teen daughter Mallory, played by Justine Bateman, and tomboy sister Jennifer, played by teeny others. Like all 80s family sitcoms, Family Times had its share of very special episodes in which the cast dealt with major issues of the day. But the core of the show was about parents who were counterculture back in their day, now dealing with teenagers who were swinging the entirely different direction in their own ideals and behaviors. And that's novel. There really was something interesting to that on a TV show. To summarize and to put this forward to my other panelists, I would say, what would we do, baby, without us? Amy, where are you on this one?
I would love to see the Keatons come back, and I think that there could be a new version of the Keatons slipping, hopefully, back the other way. But the Adamses do have longevity. They keep going. So I'm going to go Adams.
All right. Amma, where are you on this one?
I'm going to go Adams as well. Again, I think that that ability to kind of continue to reboot and kind of have something different to say with every subsequent one. I mean, the fact that Wednesday hadn't previously been portrayed as Latina and is now is an exciting fact to see that, like, this is a property that could have kind of kept going the way that it was. And they're like, no, we want to continue to bring this into the era that it's in its day. But yeah, just kind of the timelessness of the Adams makes me want to see how far they can go with this.
Great. So we will be moving the Adams family into round three. Next, in a battle of the bees, the panel's leading toward two seed the Bluths from Arrested Development, but Steve is pushing three seed the Bankses from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Steve, why are the Bankses a fresh take on the TV family? I will take the stair car and explain that if we don't vote for the Bluths, we'll never see these again. I'll go first. There's no other family on the bracket like the Bluths. The mess, the insanity, the rampant criminality and immorality. And in a 2023 world, I say, what is more American than that, I ask you? The Bluths are also notable because it's a massive family cast, and there is not a single weak link in it. Father George, played by pre-cancellation Jeffrey Tambor, legendary mother Lucille Bluth, played by Jessica Walters, total fuck-up eldest son Job, played by Will Arnett, arguably level-headed middle son Michael, played by Jason Bateman, daughter Lindsay, played by Parsha DeRossi, precious flower youngest son Buster, played by Tony Hale, deeply dysfunctional grandchildren George, Michael, and Maybe, played by Michael Cera and Alia Shawkat, and scene-stealing son-in-law Tobias Funke, played by David Cross. They had three brilliant seasons filled with complicated, layered humor, a polarizing fourth season revival, and a fifth season that we don't talk about because it never happened, right? But the Bluths gave us so many gifts and so many gifts without a T. I could name them all, but I just blew myself as well as my time allotment. They must continue or I will set myself on fire. We gays were so dramatic. With that being said, I'm going to turn it over to Steve. Talk to us about the Fresh Prince and the Bankses.
Yeah, I think that the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air just really defines the 90s in a way that no other show really does. I mean, it really ran the gamut of all of the tropes of the 90s, including the sort of, it's not a found family, but it's definitely a mixed family, you know, in the sense that obviously the main character is not a direct, you know, lineal son of the family, but yet they never treat him differently. I mean, they do sometimes, but at the same point in time, like, he really just integrates himself into the show. But just the dynamic between the dad and the mom, obviously the mom and the second mom. But at the end of the day, I find that the show really permeates the culture in a way that the Bluths didn't. You know, I think that the Bluths were iconic for a brief period of time and they were a little bit of a blip. And I don't get me wrong, I love Arrested Development. I think it is hilarious for the three seasons that it was on network television. I don't mean to keep making the longevity argument, but when I'm talking about two shows that I really do like both equally as much as I do for these shows, you have to pick something that delineates them for me. And for me, that's the longevity of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air and its ability to have defined really a whole decade.
Yeah. Amy, where are you on this one?
Fun fact, I went to day camp with Tatiana Ali at the height of The Fresh Prince. So for her, I would like to vote Bankses. And also fun fact, I've never really watched Arrested Development. With that said, they sound like a lot more fun to watch. And I'm going to watch Arrested Development now because of this dynamic. The Bankses are awesome. The show is amazing. If we were talking about 90s sitcoms, I believe that The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air needs to go all the way.
Amy, you're going with the Blues. Amma, where are you on this one?
In terms of representation of families and who we're going to end up seeing in the, like, in the later stages of it, I would love to see as many families of color as possible. And I think the Bankses have strong potential to kind of go very far. And unfortunately for me, if they weren't going up against the Bluth, I think that they would have had a great deal of it. I do think that in terms of like longevity for me, and Steve, I wonder if we define it the same way. I love the longevity of Arrested Development because it's deeply complex. So like every time I watch it, there's additional watchability because there's something new every time I see it that I didn't see before. Whereas Fresh Prince is comforting and kind of, you know exactly what you're going to get. So I think it kind of depends on what you want when you're going for multiple watches, is something to just kind of lull you into that sense of comfort where you don't have to do anything, or something that continues to challenge you. In terms of things that will like definitively hold up, I think for the most part, Fresh Prince is going to hold up regardless. Like, there's not going to be a whole lot. I do think that there are absolutely jokes on Arrested Development that in 10 years, 15 years, you're going to be like, oof. And in fact, I think there probably sure. already are. There are some jokes
already
that
are,
like,
I'm sure.
Ooh. But that is not the classifier that we're arguing under. It's best TV right. family. So I would say for yes. me, in terms of family, I'm giving the slight edge to the Bluths here.
All right. So that would be 3-4 the Bluths. I'm sorry, Steve. That means they will advance into round 3. Next, I believe we have a unanimous victory for 4-seed the Belchers from Bob's Burgers over 8-seed the Ingleses from Little House on the Prairie. The panel is currently set to say yabba dabba doo to 2-seed the Flintstones, but I'm the lone holdout preferring 3-seed the Winslows from Family Matters. Steve, why are the Flintstones so dynamite? I'll explain why the Winslows, not Steve Urkel, were the core of Family Matters. I'll go first here because I'm the odd man out. And I think most people think of Full House as the anchor show for the classic TGIF lineup. But for me, Family Matters was just as essential. Was a big part of that Steve Urkel? You know it was. There's no denying it. But you also cannot discount how important Reginald L. Johnson's Carl and Jo Marie Payton's Harriet were to 90s kids. They were parents to all of us, I think. Main kids Eddie and Laura, played by Darius McCrary and Kelly Williams, were very relatable teen icons. Little sister Judy was present until she was not. I do think that there is something to be said for this family still to be compelling, even when the driving force of the show became a third-party character. It's like if the movie What About Bob turned into a TV show. Like, everything was about that secondary character. And yet the Winslows themselves were still this very core, very solid, very identifiable and relatable family that you enjoyed. Like, I found them comforting to watch in a tumultuous 90s world, right? And my family had very little in common with them socioeconomically. So with that being said, are people still sticking with the Flintstones? Amy, you stick in the Flintstones.
No, I'm going to give it to the Winslows. And I just want to say, for everyone who's listening, I'm giving it to the Winslows also because the Tanners got knocked out in round 1. And TGIF belongs on the bracket. For that reason, the Winslows are taking all of, they're taking the step-by-step crew. They're bringing, they're carrying everyone on their backs right now.
I need, if you were clutching your pearls at the fact that the Tanners are already knocked out, I need to explain. The Tanners were up against the Starks from Game of Thrones in round 1. So before you drive your car off the road listening to this, I want you to ask yourself, what would you do in that situation? Just putting that out there. Steve, are you sticking with the Flintstones here?
Yes.
Amma, are you Winslows or are you Flintstones?
Are you TGIF or the Flintstones?
Are you animation or are you the TGIF?
Oh, Steve knows right where to go. Well done. Well played.
Oh.
It's almost like you're a lawyer in real life or something,
oh,
Steve.
Boy. The Winslows do have, like, very literal capacity to bring a whole TGIF slate with them in the sense that they did cross over with both Step by Step and Full House. I'm stalling.
You know what, Eric? I'm going to make this easy for Amma. I'm actually going to switch to the Winslows because we do have quite a bit of animation in the top 16. And I think it's well represented. And I don't think that the Flintstones are the group that's going to make it all the way. And I do think Amy has a very valid point about a sort of like family friendly program from TGIF making it to the Elite Eight.
Okay. That's a unexpected twists. Amma, I still would like a vote from you one way or the other.
I feel okay going Winslows with the understanding that I do really love live action Flintstones. And I mean, I love the animated one as well, obviously, but I'm excited to see the Winslows carry the TGIF banner into the next round.
It also gave us the McRib. Lest you forget, the original McRib came out with the Flintstones movie.
Is that true? I thought it was like a tie into an existing product. Did it really give us the McRib?
I believe it did.
No, you're right, Eric. You're absolutely
right.
Wow.
That I don't joke around when it comes to the McRib, ladies and gentlemen. I want to make that very clear.
Nor
all right,
you.
So we will advance. In a shocking upset, we will advance the Winslows into round three. Next, it's a unanimous decision, speaking of animation, as one seed The Simpsons cut short the debate future for four seed The Jetsons. Next, the panel's evenly split between two ratings-topping dynasties, three seed The Huxtables from The Cosby Show and seven seed The Starks from Game of Thrones. Amma, why are the Huxtables still America's favorite family? Amy, become the prince that was promised and dream of spring for The Starks. Amma, I'm going to have you go first.
So entirely valid creator and star criticisms accepted. I need to start with that, understanding full well that that is the world that we are in. It cannot be overstated what the Cosby Show and what the Huxtable family was able to do for Black representation on television in the time that it came out. It is unfortunate that we can't celebrate that without qualifications. Immensely unfortunate, especially because of the wonderful work done by everybody on that show that was not its star. But when you think about the way that they showed sibling dynamics, again, how to bring in new members into a family, the types of issues they were able to cover, the socioeconomic standing that a Black family could have on television, they did so much. The power that they were able to give into creating a spinoff, A Different World, gave us the opportunity to have historically Black colleges and universities, popular to a point where more people were going to college as a direct result of it. So when I think about like a great TV family, Game of Thrones was immensely popular and it has been such a big part of the pop culture conversation, but the Huxtables were part of a larger societal conversation, and that can't be overstated in this particular matchup. So I know people love Game of Thrones, and those of us with short memories might not remember just how big the Cosby Show was or what it did. So I feel compelled to bring all of that up.
Yeah, and thank you for doing so. Amy, talk to us about Game of Thrones.
We haven't really done much of this yet, but we talking about what our rubric looks like personally for how we entered this, you know, how we enter our matchups. And there's best TV families, and you could take that as, this is a family I want to be a part of. This is a family I want Thanksgiving with. And then there's families that you must tune in and watch. I would love to be a member of the Huxtable family. I don't necessarily want to be a member of the House of Stark. Good chance I die if I am. We started, my husband started actually watching Game of Thrones right after its first season. You know, was like, hey, you know, it's supposed to be really good, put it on. And within like 20 minutes of it being on in my living room, I was in. And then you get to the end of the first season, because you are so invested in season one in the Stark family. They are, he's, you know, Lord of Winterfell, King of the North. They're this amazing family with this tomboy daughter. So you've got this like Arya, not your typical girl. You've got Sansa, your totally typical girl. You've got a bastard son who's fabulous when you want to talk about people you want to tune in and watch. And you're just invested. Somebody gets pushed out a window. Kid is dying. Things are happening to this family in season one. And then, but the patriarch of the family gets his head cut off. And then you're in it. And then that is it for the next 8 seasons. You have to know how this family continues. And for the next 8 seasons, they are dealing with the death of the father from different ends of their world. And they are determined to find each other. So they are, in most situations, wonderful siblings. Their mother is devoted to them. Their brother is leading an army to defend their family. And you're so captivated. Again, not everyone is great. Not everyone does wonderful things in this show. But this is a great, great family that you have to watch.
Yeah, certainly compelling. Steve, where are you on this one?
I mean, as much as I would have picked the Lannisters, because that's where my heart is at.
They're
Starks,
a lot of fun.
No, but in all seriousness, I back up what Amy says. I have some more things to say if I think they're going to go out, but I'll see if they're going to go through or not.
Let's see where it's the Huxtables are 3 and the Starks are 7. I'm with the Huxtables here. So if you want to speak on the Starks, Steve, go for it.
I don't know if I'm going to convince you, but I really do feel like the point needs to be made. And Amy was making it very eloquently, and I think that it needs to be bolstered, which is this was a tight-knit family. I mean, they did everything together as much as they could. They got separated. They always found their way back to each other. But at the end of the day, they didn't, you know, Ned gave them all bravery, but Catelyn really gave the girls the fiery ability to stay alive through this whole thing. They're a family. I mean, they share traits. They have a unified front. And at the end of the day, they didn't all live, but man, were they the last one standing. You know, I mean, the family dynamic and what they did for each other throughout the series, even though they may have been separated a lot, really did make it such that at the end of the program, spoiler alert, you know, one of the sons is the king of the seven kingdoms. Well, six kingdoms, I guess. One of the other daughters is the queen of the north. You know, the bastard son manages to save everyone, probably. The other daughter is going to conquer the world. You know, I mean, they really, and the parents are no longer with us, but boy, didn't they leave their legacy with their children. And that's why I think they're a great family.
They are a great family. And I don't want anyone thinking that I'm saying otherwise. But here's my argument, and you've kind of alluded to a couple times. They are separated for almost that entire show. There are points where they come together now and then. And yes, they are a family in their background. But for what we're watching, for the most part, they're survivors more than they are families. And they are incredible characters, singular characters who very rarely are interacting with one another directly. The Huxtables, the family, as we talked about rubrics, the family is so core to that show and their interactions with one another. That is the point of the Cosby Show, right? And I also can't diminish Amma's point about the incredible social impact that the Huxtables had on American culture. I think the Starks did wonderful things for wolves, and I'm very excited for that for them and for people who love cold weather. But I'm giving it to the Huxtables here, which gives us a tie vote. The seeds, 3 for the Huxtables, 7 for the Starks, and the Huxtables will continue into round 3. Next, the majority of the panel is all together in favor of 4-seed the Bradys from the Brady Bunch, but Amy is stuck in high school with 8-seed the Walshes from Beverly Hills 90210. Steve, fill the grid with the reasons why the Brady should advance. Amy, try to move the Walshes into yet another posh neighborhood, in our case, the Elite Eight. I'm going to have Amy go first.
Oh, boy. The Walshes are the great American family. And they, again, we talk about, we're going to talk about some modern families. The Brady Bunch was a modern family of its day. Get it? The Walshes are the family that everybody wants to be a part of, no matter who you are. Are you the misfit kid whose parents have abandoned him, Dylan McKay? Yes, you are, and you want to be a Walsh. You want to be a part of that family, whether it's by getting in with Brenda or just getting in with your accountant. however you get there. The house. We talked about this in the intro. In our Patreon episode, Casa Walsh is such a symbol of family throughout this show. Even in the subsequent seasons where Brandon is still around, sometimes he's just producing and directing episodes and not ever on screen. But even when the Walshes are gone, Casa Walsh is where Steve and Janet live with their son or daughter. And other people come in and out of this household throughout the years because it represents what family was. And this was a family, a nuclear family from Minnesota that moved to Beverly Hills in all of its extravagance and showed them what wholesome family was. I looked at them going, oh, that we could all have that. And it exists. So I am totally, totally Team Walsh. I think they are one of the best TV families to watch because of all their drama, but also to love and learn from.
Great. Thank you. Steve, talk to us about the Brady Bunch.
Yeah, I think that the Brady Bunch was monumental in what it did for television families. You know, the idea that the family could be something, you know, as we watch TV in the 50s and 60s, the idea that the family could be something other than a mother, a father, a son, and a daughter, or two siblings, the sort of what we learned in the 80s to be called the nuclear family. The idea that this family could be of two parents who all had kids of their own, and they came together and they formed their own new family. who had their obviously own family dynamics, and there were some weird dynamics in that family for sure. But at the end of the day, you know, mom and dad were a united front, and they really kept the kids in check, and the kids, you know, were... you know, they were who they were, and they all got along for the most part. You know, I mean, Marcia and Jan obviously had their issues, but that would have been true in a dynamic of two actual, not that they weren't related, but that didn't have anything to do with the fact that, you know, this wasn't the family dynamic. And so at the end of the day, it just changed how America could look at a family and see a family that might be different from the one that is just a mother, a father, a brother, and a sister. And I thought that that was, you know, a really good way. Not that the Walshes aren't great. And again, I said it in the Patreon episode. And if you haven't listened to the Patreon episode, subscribe and listen, because we had some fun arguments. But at the end of the day, the Walshes, because I put them in there by my vote, but I don't think they're as quintessential to the show as the Bradys are, obviously, by the very name of the show.
Thank you. Amma, where are you on this one?
This is really hard because, again, this kind of goes back to two shows that I feel very passionately about, and two different imaginations or two different conceptions of family. One kind of being a blended family that's popped up and a pretty early instance of that from the landscape of like TV overall versus, again, like, if we're being expansive enough in our definition, probably pretty close to being a found family. But again, in the Patreon episode, I did allude to like the ship of Theseus metaphor, where it's like, if you take all the Walshes out and then put a family in, like, is it still the ship of Theseus, right? Like, is it the Walshes? It is built with their ethos and their kind of like central appreciation of family in mind. And certainly their house was a big part of it. But then that goes like, is it the house or is it the family? As in terms of family have been set forth from how we've been arguing to this point, the Bradys are a better representation of it.
Amy, don't hate me, but I'm also going to give it to the Bradys here. And I will say, you're actually making me want to do an episode devoted to the best sitcom family home.
Yes.
I think that could be a really fun episode.
Yeah, that would be great.
Or best TV
and
family.
And the Bradys
home.
Would be on that one.
I was just going to say that.
For sure.
Like they could,
for sure.
Yeah, they could meet again and we could have to have this argument all over.
Exactly. And the Starks and Winterfell could be in there. Really, there's a lot of places we could go. But I do think that the Bradys are the more important family for the TV show here. And if you're worried about your lack of Walshes, there is a best teen drama of the 90s and 2000s episode coming in season 9. It will be coming soon. I guarantee you we will be discussing the Walshes in 90210 more there. So with that being said, we are going to move the Brady Bunch into round 3. Finally, in round 2, the panel is split between 2 ABC families, 2 seed the Connors from Roseanne, and 3 seed the Dunphys from Modern Family. Amy stumped for the Dunphys. To continue, I will take a seat on the Afghan-covered couch and hype the Connors. I'll go first here. There was, in my opinion, no more accurate portrayal of working class families on television in the 90s than the Connors. Believe it or not, it was groundbreaking. I cannot think of a sitcom family more real, more grounded, and yet somehow so funny than the Connors in the first 4 or 5 seasons of Roseanne. This was as close to my family as TV got. The hand-me-downs, the parents dealing with very real financial pressures, the kids growing up and making terrible decisions like starting a podcast. It was all there. It was practically a mirror. What Roseanne Barr has done with her life and her reputation is deeply sad to me because she was a pioneer who we should be praising. She brought a real believability to her role and an honesty about the struggles of blue-collar families that was revolutionary. John Goodman continues to be rightfully celebrated for his role as Dan, the father who was trying his damnedest, but also just about fed up with loss after loss. The kids, Becky 1 or 2, both of them very good, weirdo son DJ, and absolute slacker legend Darlene, perfectly cast, exceptionally well drawn, and the family was rounded out with Laurie Metcalf's Aunt Jackie and Estelle Parsons' reliably exasperating grandma. The Connors are, of course, back on TVs now, and the fact that they resonate with audiences in the 2020s about as well as they did with audiences in the 1990s is a statement not only about the quality of the show, but also on America. And that's not a great statement. With that being said, I'm going to pass it over now for Amy to talk about the Dunphys.
So in the Patreon episode, we talk about the Pritchetts versus the Dunphys, right? We talked about as actually a separate entities, the Pritchetts as a whole, the multi-generational version of the Modern Family, did not make it through, but the Dumfies are here and I am here for them because my husband and I, when watching the show at its heyday, often looked at each other and said, this is us. Which is ironic since we've now talked about how kind of a bitch Claire can be. But I own it. And he probably would say for that reason, he thinks that I'm very Claire-like. I think that they are, as a couple, a wonderful depiction, really not caricatured too much of many suburban couples that I know now. I love her arc of being what it is to be a mom and have, you know, she starts off as a stay-at-home mom and then eventually goes back to work and you see that transition for her, which is so common. And it's mom finding their own way. And he is just amazing to watch. He is so funny throughout. They have three fabulously entertaining children. And oh my goodness, they could not have gotten luckier when they cast these children at such a young age and they end up actually growing up. You know, I always wonder how that happens. They grow up to be attractive individuals. Someone had some good AI at some point in time and projected well. They are the most nuclear typical family within the show, but I think they do a wonderful representation of the show as a whole in its quirkiness and its wildness and how they interact with all the multi-generations. So I think when you look at even just the Dumfies, you can start to see Claire and her dad's relationship, Phil and his father's relationship, Claire and her estranged mother's relationship, her relationship with the brothers. I think it all still fits in here. While I don't necessarily think the clan as a whole from Modern Family is in many ways just as groundbreaking as the Connors or the Brady Bunch because of where they were and what they did for literally the Modern Family. The Dunphys are just a piece of that, but I think they belong here and they're like my last standing family on the bracket. So I really hope they get to go forward. If not, I've got no one in the game.
Okay. I like the pity vote attempt. That's excellent. Amma, where are you on this one?
I would like to find a way to keep the Dunphys in because, again, I feel like of the branches of the Pritchett family tree, they're the one that I like the best. But there is just this undeniable, groundbreaking quality of what Roseanne did for kind of representing middle America on television. Like, you don't get King of the Hill without it. You don't get the middle without it. It needing to come back. And of all the things that could have been rebooted, the idea that it gets to come back as a result of that speaks to the uniqueness of its perspective. And again, Roseanne is another one where it's like, I wish we didn't have to qualify the degree to which its creator has tainted its reputation because it is something so wonderful and so unique that it brought to the TV landscape. And I can't ignore that. It's not to say that the Dunphys and the Modern Family larger group doesn't have the capacity to do that in the future, but having seen what Roseanne has been able to do, there's kind of the slight bias against pushing it forward because it's had such a significant impact.
So right now you're on Team Connors. Okay.
I am.
Steve, where are you on this one?
I'm still with the Dunphys. I mean, I know that this isn't probably going to do much, so I'm not going to take up too much time, but I just really feel like they defined a generation in the same way the Connors defined a generation. You know, the Connors defined a generation of the 90s sort of like, for lack of a better way to put it, like a struggling family, and I don't mean to use that pejoratively, but the Dunphys... And I'm not even including the whole Modern Family because I think that even on a broader standpoint, it's even bigger than that. But the Dunphys really redefined what the family of the 2010s was. You know, I mean, it really was, you know, a wife and a husband who were both working, but both had very successful careers and both had, you know, children that they loved, but all had very dynamic personalities. And they went through a lot of the struggles that really defined parents of the 2010s. And so I don't want to underestimate what the Dunphys did for the 2010s that the Connors also did for the 1990s. I don't think that they both defined a decade in a way that other shows didn't. But at the end of the day, I think that the Dunphys are more of a, for lack of a better way to put it, a dynamic family that has a lot of other parts to it where the Connors just I don't know. I mean, I feel like they can be, I love Aunt Jackie, but yeah, I'm with the Dunphys.
Well, here's the bad news. We're tied 2-2, and by the seeds, the Connors win, because it's a 2 seed for the Connors, 3 seed for the Dunphys. I think you all have done an amazing job arguing for them, great compelling arguments, but I do want to move us forward here. So, Amy, I'm sorry. It is the Connors going into the Elite Eight, but you did a great job stumping for the Dunphys, both of you. With that being said, that's the end of round two, folks. We're going to take a quick break, go to the Lanford Lunchbox, and we'll be right back after these messages.
$5 can't buy you much these days. In the 90s, a Big Mac extra value meal rang in at $4.59. Today, the same meal will cost you $7.89 and leave you filled with regret. You know who would never do that to you? The Great Pop Culture Debate. For just $5 a month, our Patreon supporters gain access to a treasure trove of unaired content, like those secret fries at the bottom of the bag. So if you're hungry for some delicious pop culture content, pass on the Big Mac and head to greatpopculturedebate.com to become a Patreon supporter today. Aw, now I'm hungry.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
And we are back for round three of our Best TV Family Debate. Before we get to the Elite Eight, I would like my panelists to share their social media and let us know what other projects you're working on. Amma, how can people find you? What are you working on?
I am on Instagram and YouTube at Amma Marfo. I have a half-hour comedy special on my YouTube channel called Enjoy Your Nachos. It was recorded in January of this year, and I believe it to still be funny, so please go watch it. I do an online comedy show every month, the second Wednesday on Twitch called Pantry Raid on Comedy Hub. And yeah, we have a great time. Come watch anytime.
Fabulous. Thank you very much. Amy, what are your socials and what else are you working on?
Sure. So you can find me and some cute family members at Instagram at Amy Pilot, A-M-Y Pilot, like an airplane pilot with two T's. And if you want to get some of that family aggression out on the spin bike, you can find me, Amy Spins 83, on Peloton. Otherwise, not really on the socials. And professionally, if your family is driving you a little bit crazy and you want to support behavioral health and mental health, I work with our psychiatry service line and fundraise for very important services because, you know, we all have that crazy uncle.
We do. We do. Or in my case, I am that crazy uncle. Thank you very much. Steve, what are your socials and what else are you working on?
Yeah, I'm not super active on the socials, but you can find me on Instagram at snikoloff, S-Q-N-I-K-O-L-O-F-F, E-S-Q. Yes, I am a lawyer. Don't hate me. and also same handle on Twitter. I can also say I watched Amma's video on YouTube and she is definitely very funny.
Awesome. Hey, yay. We love to see Yay. I love that. Thank you. And thank you again, Steve, for being the Patreon sponsor for this episode. We greatly appreciate it. You've been a wonderful supporter of the show. So we are so grateful to you. Seriously.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure.
Thank you. You can find me at Eric Resniak on Twitter and Instagram. That's E-R-I-C, R-E-Z as in zebra, S as in snake, N as in Nancy, Y-A-K. I would say forget about Twitter. We're going to be kind of sliding off of that. Or just message at Great Pop Culture Debate on Insta, TikTok, or Threads, or at GPCD on Mastodon, which is where we're doing a lot of our posting now. With that being said, let's get into round three before Lucille Bluth tries to rope us into the next Mother Boy pageant. We have 1 seed, the Adamses, versus 2 seed, the Bluths. We're going to go around the horn. Amma, I'm going to start with you. Bluths versus Adamses.
I detest being alphabetically first on days like this.
I know.
I'm giving it to the Bluths. I want to see how far they can go.
Okay. Amy, where are you on this one?
You were really close there. I'm an AM too, Amma. I'm going to go Adams.
All right. Steve.
Yeah, Adams.
Even if I vote for the Bluths, it wouldn't matter because the Adamses are the ultimate number one seed. So the Adamses will continue. I do like that they were our last dysfunctional choice. Actually, take that back. The Bradys are still in here. They're pretty dysfunctional. Yeah, that is a bummer. The Adamses, however, have done more than enough to stake their claim on the Final Four. Next, it's 4 seed the Belchers from Bob's Burgers versus 3 seed the Winslows from Family Matters. Going to start at the end of the row this time. Steve, which one are you going with?
Belchers.
Amy, where are you going?
Winslow, TGIF.
Amma, where are you?
Belchers.
I'm also going with the Belchers here. I think the Winslows have had a good run, and I know you wanted to keep TGIF in the running. Again, it is a tragedy what happened to the Tanners in round one, but I do think that in terms of a TV family specifically, the Belchers have something quite unique, and I'm excited that they're in the Final Four, even though we've barely talked about them. Speaking of animated ones, this is a brutal one. It's 1 seed the Simpsons versus 3 seed the Huxtables. Amy, I'm going to start in the middle with you. Simpsons versus the Huxtables from the Cosby Show. I can see Amma literally imploding on my screen. Amy, where are you?
I, unlike Amma, am not a huge fan of the animation. However, I think that the Simpsons, if there is going to be an animated family that has a chance to go all the way, I believe it is the Simpsons. But then there's the Cosbys, the Huxtables. Let's not give credit to any one individual. I think I'm going to go Huxtable here.
Okay. Steve, where are you going with this one? I hope you all understand the torment that we're feeling at this choice.
This bracket, we said it before and I'm going to say it again. This bracket sucked.
This bracket is ridiculous.
Yes, it is.
The Simpsons are awesome, but I have another favorite animated family, and I don't want it to be animated versus animated because people will scream at us online. And I do, all obvious problems aside, I'm going to go with the Huxtables too.
Amma.
I'm giving it to the Huxtables. I am, because again, I just think that these are two families that frankly both had really, really, really big impacts on society overall. The Simpsons is a juggernaut, and yet the Huxtables also did something really special. And I worry a lot about like the larger legacy of the Huxtables and the Cosby Show getting left behind because its creator did something. And so many other people did wonderful things on that show that are going to get lost to history because of that. Yeah, I'm giving it to the Huxtables.
I will also say just really quickly, The Simpsons was about as influential for about as long as the Huxtables were. And then it really just kind of went on from there. So I would say that their influence was over the same period of years.
And they're not as influential now, is your point.
That's my point. Yeah, that the fact that The Simpsons are still on doesn't really affect my decision. When The Simpsons was great, it was great. And when The Huxtables was great, it was great. And I think that was for about the same amount of time.
So we haven't really talked that much about The Simpsons. And here's what I'm going to put into this conversation. I'll tip my hat. I'm voting for The Huxtables, so it's kind of irrelevant. But I want to make this point. What makes The Simpsons so special, I would argue, is not necessarily the family unit within the show. It is the universe that is created around them. The supporting characters of The Simpsons, I think, are almost as important to its success, at least after the first few seasons, as everybody, as the core five. And really, it's four, because, I mean, Maggie's Maggie. Aside from shooting Mr. Burns, I don't know what else she's doing. But I do think that that is the power of The Simpsons. And I agree that at this point, it's an inertia thing. They're not really contributing to the culture in 2023. So the fact that they've been on almost the entire time that I've been alive is almost irrelevant to me. If we're putting them side by side, I think you can say they had equal impacts. But the Huxtables, it was about the family. And The Simpsons is about the world of Springfield. So that's where I'm coming down on this one, making it a clean sweep for the Huxtables. Finally, in the Elite Eight, it's the Bradys from the Brady Bunch versus the Connors from Roseanne. I'm going to start with Steve as our special guest. Where are you on this one?
The Connors.
Ooh, okay. Interesting. Amy, where are you?
The Brady Bunch, because they defeated the Walshes. Therefore, I feel they should go further.
By the transitive property. I love that. Amma, where are you?
Ooh. Yeah. I'm giving it to the Connors. I think they did something really, really special that opened up a lot of other potential for other things.
Yeah, I'm on Team Brady with you, Amy, just because I do think if you're talking iconic American families, the Bradys have more weight to me than the Connors. But if we're talking about families that did more interesting things and were more realistic on television, it is the Connors. They're pretty, I think, equal in terms of cultural impact. Everybody knows them. Everybody knows those two families. But I would have given it to the Bradys. But that being said, the Connors are a 2 seed. The Bradys are a 4 seed. So the Connors will continue into the final four. That is it, folks. We've had our final four. We're going to take another quick break to investigate why Lisa, Bart, and Maggie Simpson have not aged a day in over 30 years. I assume it's malnutrition. We will be right back after these messages.
Do you suffer from FOMOphobia? That's the fear of missing out on important events that connect you to the world. You don't want to be the only person at work not talking about the most recent episode of the show everyone's dying to watch, right? Why not sign up for the Great Pop Culture Debate's free weekly newsletter? You'll get a curated list of upcoming releases in TV, music, film, and games, so you'll never be left out of the conversation. Avoid the FOMO. Head to greatpopculturedebate.com and subscribe today.
And we are back with the final four of our best TV family debate. At this point in the show, I always like to take a step back and see if the final four matches up with where I thought we would go. And as we were discussing in our break, no, none of us thought it was going to end up like this. It's been a wild ride. As I think Amma said, I was here the whole time, and yet I don't know how we got here. Is that correct, Amma?
Yes. I never would have predicted this. Like, it's an interesting four, but it's certainly not. If you were to just tell me pick four that'll make it, would not have guessed it.
I do think it's interesting that we have in the four final four, we have a 1 seed, a 2 seed, a 3 seed, and a 4 seed. That's very rare that that happens. All right. So let's do this. We're going to jump right in. It's 1 seed, the Adamses from the Addams Family versus 4 seed, the Belchers from Bob's Burgers. I'm going to start. Amma, sorry, you're first up. Where are you going to go?
Blame my parents. They named me. I am giving it to the Belchers. I recognize the timelessness of the Adamses, but man, over these 14 seasons, the Belchers have just found and created and cultivated such a soft spot in my heart. It's just weird and silly and funny and something really special. Like, it's at the bar for like new animation is really, really high for me. And I don't know that anybody's cleared it in a way as decisively as they have.
Great. Amy, where are you on this one?
The Adamses. And we've said it before, and I'm going to reiterate it. There are 4 people on this podcast. We probably all think of different Adamses. And I think that if you were to survey everybody who's listening, they relate to an Addams Family in one way or another because they are so iconic. And I think for that reason, because they are in everybody's purview, they are best TV family we have left.
All right. Steve, where are you on this one?
This is really hard for me because I used to own a bar and we had a TV in the bar that only played Bob's Burgers all the time. And we called it the Bob's Burgers machine. And that's probably super illegal. And I'm a lawyer and I'm probably going to get disbarred for that because of copyright problems. But basically, we just played Bob's Burgers on a loop. And I've seen every episode of that show 5, 6, 7 times. And I love it. I love it. I love the family dynamic. I love Linda. I love the way she talks to all of her kids. I love the way that the kids are so different. I love that Bob's not a complete boob. But at the end of the day, if we're talking about the best TV family, the Belchers are great, but the Adamses are timeless. And I think that's why I'm going to go with the Adamses.
So here's an argument that I have not made thus far, but I'm going to make it now. This is best TV family, and I believe there have only been 2 Addams Family properties that have been on TV. The original
one? Well, there's the cartoons,
too. We'll include the cartoons. So we have the original, and then we have Wednesday. But all the other – there were cartoon movies, and then there's the 90s movies that are wildly successful. But those are movies, so I'm not including that in my personal rubric. Everybody's different. But in terms of TV, I'm really only looking at – I haven't watched any of the cartoons. I couldn't tell you about those. But the original 1960s and Wednesday. Those are the 2 ones that I'm looking at. The Belchers are unequivocally television. But I don't think it matters because if Amy and Steve are both Team Adamses, they're advancing to the final 4 because they're the ultimate number 1 seed. Right? And Amy and Steve, you're sticking?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. As much as I love the Belchers, I can't, the Adams is my heart.
All right. So they will advance to the final two. It's the Huxtables, a 3 seed versus 2 seed, the Connors. I'm going to start with Steve, Cosby Show, or Roseanne. Which one are you going with?
The Connors.
All right. Amy, where are you on this one?
The Huxtables.
Amma, where are you on this one?
The Huxtables.
I'm also going with the Huxtables here, and I have two reasons. Number one, the Connors were my family, which is very important to see at the time, but the Huxtables was the family I was like, oh, people can be nice to one another as siblings. Parents can be understanding and talk to their children as though they were like actual human beings and not dogs. It was mind-blowing to me. It also had a literally, like, it completely blew up, I think, for many Americans, what a black family could look like. Like, that was completely new for many people. We had the Jeffersons, of course, and we had other shows as well, Good Times, etc. But the Cosby Show was like, I don't think you're aware of the actual socioeconomic status and potential of the African-American community. It was huge. And it was, I think, between the two of them, the bigger of the two shows. It was a juggernaut in the 80s, and I just used the J word.
Yeah, Eric, to your point, Roseanne looked like your family. Huxtables looked like my family.
Yeah.
And we didn't really have a whole lot of other places to look at that point. So that was of note to me.
Sure. And the other element that I will put is we mentioned our TV Mom episode earlier, and one of my great regrets from that episode is not pushing forward Claire Huxtable to the final two, because I honestly believe she deserved to be there. Final two, if nothing else. So if I could redo that one, I would. I can't. I'm going to give the Huxtables for this one, which gives us a final two of 1 seed, the Adamses, versus 3 seed, the Huxtables. Amy, I'm starting in the middle with you. Where are you going?
Okay, so this is hard. Because it depends how you want to answer this question, right? Is this the family you want to be in or the family you want to watch? And while I really enjoy watching the Adamses, I'm going to give it to the Huxtables, if for no other reason than Claire got knocked out of the Best Moms episode too early. And Elton works at Trader Joe's, so they deserve to get celebrated here.
Huxtables. All right. The Huxtables. Steve, where are you on this one?
I am gonna go with the Adamses because they have defined several decades worth of how we look at families. And not even just the movies, I'm talking about the TV show Wednesday, but there's also cartoon series that have been on TV. There are multiple generations of people who can sing that they're creepy and they're kooky, you know, and everyone knows the, you know, and so I think that the idea of the Addams Family permeates the culture. Not that the Huxtables don't, but the Addams Family permeates the culture in a way that the Huxtables permeated a particular era. And I think that the Addams have more staying power.
Okay, it's a good argument. Amma, where are you on this one?
So I'm going to pick the Huxtables, and I'm going to do so that in a way that borrows from Steve's argument. So yes, there is kind of the theme song ever-presence of the Addams Family, and there's kind of the snapping and kind of the iconography of it. But if you were to ask me, like, are there moments from the Addams Family that you remember? I don't honestly really have any. Whereas when I think about what it would be like to be in the Huxtable family, I think about that experience that they built out for Theo to show him how hard it would be to live in the real world if he decided to quit school. Or like the anniversary party for the grandparents where they lip sync Night and Day by Ray Charles. B.B. King comes to the house and Kenny is kind of like singing the blues along with him. Like all of these moments that are like really evocative and specific. And I don't have those for the Addams Family. It's kind of more of a feeling. So I think when it comes to like best TV family, and I can think very clearly right away of what it would be like, the Huxtables take it for me.
And I'm afraid I'd just be Uncle Fester and like, listen, I don't need that on my soul. yeah, I think I'm with the Huxtables here. And I go back to the Addams started their lives as a comic strip, right? They weren't even an original TV family. They were interpreted by the TV, but they've been interpreted in many other media as well. I think they are a great multimedia family, and they certainly fit this bracket. They were on TV. They were a family on TV. But in terms of a family that defined what it looked like to be a family, regardless if it was from a specific point in time, I think the Huxtables did it better than just about anybody. And so that's why I do give it to the Huxtables here. I hope that's okay, Steve. I know you're the Patreon sponsor of this episode.
No, it's perfectly okay because it's a hard call. I mean, it wasn't like I sat here and I was like, oh, the Addams is like, no question asked. Like, yeah, that's a hard call. I see both sides of that coin.
Great. Thank you. So there you have it, folks. Our pick for the best TV family is the Huxtables from The Cosby Show. Do you agree? Do you think that the last round was just a fantasy that we should retcon out when we do a reboot? Tell us how you really feel by leaving a comment on this episode at greatpopculturedebate.com or find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, or Mastodon. While you're there, make sure you subscribe and follow the podcast so you can hear about what new debates are coming soon, vote in open polls, and even decide which topics we tackle next. If you really enjoyed the episode, please take a minute to like and rate the episode of this podcast on Apple, Spotify, or whatever platform you listen on. I want to say thank you to my panel. Thank you for being a part of our podcast family. And thank you for listening. If you loved what you heard, please consider supporting us on Patreon, where you can get even more exclusive content and episodes a whole day early. We hope you have a good one. And remember, everyone is entitled to their own opinion. Also, there's always money in the banana stand.